Hi. So welcome to my session. For those of you who are here, congratulations, you won the award for finding the SQL session. That is not listed, so. And for the record, this is about Spark and not about Beam, so don't get me started on Beam. Separate conversation. Anyway, joking aside, I think I'm gonna get started, so. Okay, so it's great to be in Montreal. I think there's one thing I learned in Montreal is that you can really easily get lost in the dark tunnel of Montreal. I lost, I don't know, 3 times the last 2 days. Turn around in a circle. I kid you not, I walk around for an hour and come back and it's like I was started in the same spot I started with. So anyway. Okay, so all joking aside, today I'm gonna talk about Apache Spark and scaling up Apache Spark and building interesting stuff at Uber. So, a little bit about myself. Oh, a little bit about the agenda, actually, first. There's really 4 different parts that are kind of really different, so we're gonna breeze through a lot of it. The first part is a quick introduction of Uber Data Platform. The second part is gonna talk about what kind of interesting things teams are building using Spark. And then the third part is gonna talk about some of the pretty specific, unique challenges with running Spark at Uber itself. And the last part is actually working with open source community, and that's kind of why I'm here. I love Apache, so. So about Apache and me, I started working on different project, I think more like 4 or 5 years ago now. I believe my very first patch for Spark was about, I think, more close to 5 years now. So I've been working on a couple of different projects, but primarily I'm the Spark PMC committer and also Zeppelin PMC committer as well. And I was with the project at the very beginning, I think within the first month or something, the very first patch. Actually, the first patch took quite a bit longer than I thought it would get in, but that's kind of what happened. Currently, I'm an engineering manager for data platform for Uber in Seattle, and also lead the effort for Spark within Uber itself. Okay, so data in Uber. So I guess if you can hear me, let me know, I'll speak louder. So Uber's mission is actually to bring reliable transportation. Every form of transportation, you might have heard the news about what we're talking about, different types of transportation, what we call modalities. But the goal here is to everyone and everywhere. So data is informing a lot of different decisions within the company itself. And there's a huge amount of data that we have access to that holds all these really insightful information that we leverage for making decisions. So essentially, data is driving Uber's business. And Spark is really in the middle of it, driving the business as well. So give you two quick examples here. The Uber Movement project, which is giving cities and community access to transportation information, like traffic and so on. It's obviously getting processed using Spark. And also, when you look at Uber Eats, when we open up the rider application, you want to say get a ride, but you get recommendation for what kind of food you can get. That kind of bootstrapping recommendation is also done using Spark. So we talk about Spark, so what is Spark? So in my opinion, what makes Spark very interesting is not only really scaling well to petabyte scale, but the more important thing is not because it's fast, because everybody thinks it's fast, but everything is fast, so it's kind of hard to objectively look at what is fast and what is faster than fast. But I think more important thing is actually the programming model. It's very easy to get started. Almost everybody I talked to was really readily get started on Spark as a platform to prototype things. So that's kind of really, I think, the important thing. And so what we're doing here is in the data platform team is taking the open source project and making real world impact with Uber's business. So if we look back in time, about 4 years ago, it's actually not that long ago, but it's, you know, in big data space, this is, I don't know, ancient history. Early days is all just services and RDBMS. There's really no big data stack. It's all like databases and stuff, which is actually good for a few terabytes of data. Everything is super fast, right? Because, you know, you have all these RDBMS, they're all really fast. But then, you know, starting in 2014, we started to look at, hey, we talk about Hadoop and big data, and there's a few visionary folks looking at Apache Spark even at that time, which is really early days. And we're like, okay, we can do some more interesting things about it. So this is where the company started looking at using Hadoop and running ETL using Script, using Spark, ingesting data from these places like RDBMS, where their data sources, and also doing the warehousing Vertica as well. Well, 2016 is where things get a lot more interesting, because we actually spend maybe about a year now building on Apache Spark. That's the time when we had two different talks in Spark Summit 2016 talking about the SDK tooling that we built, or the minhash LSH things. We were looking at trips and looking at similarity and things like that. So this is a very exciting time. But to bring you back, 2016 to now, it's 2 years. So this is what we're looking at running Apache Spark at Uber. So today we have more than 100,000 jobs per day. More than 96, I think it's more like 98% of all the ETL pipelines running on Spark. And if you look at the yarn cluster we have, and we have different types of cluster too, in the case of yarn cluster, we're running more than 88% of the workloads running on top of Spark itself. And then to put things into context, we have over 11,000 machines across different data centers, different resource managers as well. If you look at specifically Spark SQL, we have over almost 200,000 Spark SQL jobs per month running across the different data set, including tens of petabytes of data or even hundreds of petabytes of images. So to handle all that kind of load and scale and traffic, one thing we're doing in the last year, we were building up this new Spark as a service. Essentially, the idea here is we have the service layer in the form of REST API. In fact, we're using Apache Livy incubating for that. And it has the routing layer to figure out how to talk to different cluster manager. So we have a resource manager, cluster manager called Peloton, which is a form of, it builds on top of Apache Mesos. So this is something that we've talked about in the Apache Mesos meetup, I think, back in June. And then we have Yarn. So essentially, we have Yarn and Mesos and Spark running on top of two different systems. And then you have around it, you know, all the essential enterprise readiness stuff, like security, authentication, failover, all active data cross data center setup, observability, metrics collection, cluster manager. All the same types of languages are supported by Spark, but different types of workload we're going to talk about more in a bit. And underneath the cover, we have a shared data lake on top of HDFS. So when you think about data platform, this is kind of how we think about like the top level use cases we see on top, plus these are sort of the verbs we can think about, like what kind of action we need to be included in part of the data platform. So on top, you see business intelligence, visualization, streaming analytics, machine learning, managing metadata or just knowledge on the data itself, and then experimentation, segmentation, all these other things. And then obviously other things like deep learning is also happening here, but I'm kind of looping into machine learning. So if you think about that correspondingly, these are the sort of the things that we need to be part of the platform itself, the ability to produce, ingest, store, model, disperse, check quality lineage, observe the workload in the cluster at different level as well, and also secure it. So in addition to that, we also have other things like metrics, advertising, other things that we're building around the space, and also real-time analytics as well. So This is another view of the data platform. Some of the boxes might be a little bit dated. I think we have a little bit more up-to-date view on some of these pieces. But the high-level view is essentially the same, right? We have external data sources, whether it's messaging, RDBMS, Cassandra, you know, other things that are integrated with services. Remember back in 2014, have this sort of like one system on the thing, or now there's sort of a clean separation between two parts. And then you have ways to get the data in, data modeling, processing, you know, and so on and so forth. And you can see, actually, I'm going to go more into that. Spark actually plays in all different parts of it. So to give you an example, right, ingestion of data from different sources, Kafka, Schemaless, Cassandra, MySQL, for example, these are all through a self-serve data pipeline called Hoover. This is built on top completely on Spark. And that's taking the data in a reliable and a very low latency, low overhead kind of manner, and landing it into HDFS as raw data, into raw tables. And that's built on top of Spark. So this is actually one of the biggest set of Spark job, right? Because if you look at data as a journey, you look at it as a funnel, essentially. At the very beginning, you have the huge volume data. As you sort of data model in these things and cleaning and so on, it gets smaller. So this has the biggest volume of everything we have, essentially. So in any given point in time, we could have been running thousands of workers, running different sort of what we call different tiers in different pipelines. Sometimes you have 3,000-4,000 workers running at the same time. So this presents one of the biggest challenges we have with Spark. Another way to think about it, the next step to look at this is, once we have the raw table landed in here, you probably want to do some modeling, ETL, cleaning, and so on and so forth. So here we have Hive running on Spark. So this is a project that started, I think, maybe 2015 or so. This is essentially an engine you can specify within Hive to say, run it on top of Spark itself. So today we have Hive query running essentially hundreds of thousands of these every week, with the default engine is Spark within Uber. So with Hive and ETL and data modeling, data preparation, and all these other things, these are all happening on top of Hive on Spark. Now, after you get, might not be really easy to see the coloring here, but you see some of the purple boxes on the top. Once you have the model table, and that's kind of the cooked data you can trust, right? And that's where with the machine learning, ad hoc analysis with Query Builder, or some of the data science stuff comes in, right? You can do all these analysis and machine learning stuff on top of it. So essentially, if you think about data platform and open source, everything is running on open source. Almost everything is running on Apache Spark. And so a big part of that is also keeping up with the momentum of the community. If you look at how many releases Apache Spark has in the last 6 months, for example, it's actually quite challenging to do. And we'll get back to that in a little bit. We'll talk more. So another way to look at this is there's definitely a few things that was left out. But if you look at resource management, we have Hadoop Yarn specifically. We have Mesos. We also have different types of query engine we call Spark, Hive. Flink is also part of the real-time streaming system here. That's sort of outside of scope of this talk, but that's also there. Different types of formats being used, Parquet, OLC, Avo. I'm sure data scientists like to have CSV and all these JSON files and things like that. That's too small to cover here. And then for storage, obviously we heavily depend on HDFS. We also have the messaging part of it, the real-time messaging part that's running exclusively on Kafka itself. In terms of security, we're using Apache Knox and Apache Sentry for policy management. I think I'm missing out all the Apache I can add in this slide. There's too many to add on that. For some of the interactive analysis, we also have Presto. Apache Pinot incubating is also part of this. And I think Jupyter is also for a notebook. Actually, I think Pinot is not quite incubating. But anyway, long story. But we also have Apache Linfi, which is also as part of the Spark as a service that we talk about. So in terms of not only we're heavily depending on all the Apache project, Apache Big Data projects, we're also looking at how we can leverage the latest and greatest and also contributing back, right? In terms of some of the innovation in HDFS, Observer, NameNode, these are the things, the federation we're looking at. These are the things that we're also collaborating closely with the community. In terms of Spark, one area that I'm kind of driving is also the overall reliability and scalability in terms of specifically things like shuffle service. So all in all, we're looking at something maybe uniquely, not really that unique, but more or less uniquely kind of positioned within data platform itself. That the notion of Apache community and openness. Okay, so let's switch gear a little bit and talk more about a couple of different options and approach that we're using to build intelligent applications. So first of all, let me introduce, we talk about machine learning, let me introduce Michelangelo. This is the Uber's internal machine learning platform. These are all the nice UI and all that with ways you can look at model performance, looking at like decision tree and all these other things. But more importantly, this is actually the whole coherent end-to-end, all the way from managing data, feature, distributed training, evaluating model, and also deployment and serving, and also monitoring performance changes around machine learning, and including deep learning as well. So this is a very complete, comprehensive end-to-end sort of machine learning platform. So that's one way of doing it. But specifically, we talk about Michelangelo. If you can see the highlight purple boxes here, is a big part of it is actually leveraging Spark for the scale up part of it, right? Data preparation, it makes a lot of sense to use Spark SQL. Feature generation is also part of that as well. And then you look at distributed model training, batch training, and also looking at batch scoring. If you have to go back and score a lot of historical data, for example. And then all in all, we look at performance monitoring and also leveraging Spark for that processing. So I won't go into other pieces, but as you can see, the goal here is to say, I think Spark is kind of deep inside the machine learning platform there as well. Another kind of interface we want to look at is the idea of building an environment for data scientists. So this is what we call the data science workbench. Essentially, this is a web portal with Jupyter interface or RStudio interface and the ability to build these dashboard with, like for example, Shiny or Matplotlib and different language and visualization packages that you like to use, all within that one interface or one web application. So this is a place where the notebook interface is giving a way to do interactive analysis and also doing things like data exploration, preparation. Sometimes you do some ad hoc analysis. Sometimes you do some exploration of the machine learning model. But you can also do things like basically scheduling a job in a Jupyter notebook that gets run on a schedule that pipes into a dashboard. So the idea here is one simple, easy way. You can you don't need to actually understand how to productionalize certain things or write a lot of code. Just from a simple Jupyter interface, you can actually build up the analytics or machine learning stuff that you need and then expose it out in the visualization, in the interface and dashboard that, for example, for us, operational people all across the world would depend on. They can come back to this every day and look at, oh, how are these changing, and what do I need to do differently? So here's what happens under the cover with data science workbench. You get the data scientists on the left-hand side. You get the front-end part of it, and there's sort of managed application scope and management there. But then the execution is happening in a cluster system, running different containers for different interface, RStudio, for example, with a storage layer that we build, but at the same time, this whole system can also connect to this Spark as a service that we talk about through the REST API, through a component called Spark Magic. So this is kind of a great way you can extend the power of the cluster from within your simple notebook itself. With virtually very simple changes, you can just run the same thing that was running on maybe a simple container, or even just running on your laptop. Now it could run on the entire cluster itself. So we talk about Michelangelo and Data Science Workbench. We don't lack the example where people are just building sort of PySpark, you know, down to the metal kind of thing. So oftentimes you could either do this from a Data Science Workbench using PySpark from there, or you can just run PySpark, and we have a lot of that actually as well. The idea here is you can use PySpark for some data preparation, maybe a small amount of feature generation in there, and then you parallelize the data and have it run through native Python packages like scikit-learn or even TensorFlow in that way, but let's talk about TensorFlow in a different context. And then the result would get collected back into the Hive table. So that's a common pattern. The other common pattern with Spark is same sort of data coming in Hive table, but you could be using Scala or Python. It doesn't actually matter that much. But you could be using MLlib. A Spark internal machine learning library could run the machine learning model or training in a distributed kind of manner. So this does that automatically, and then the result get written into HFS, where it get leveraged by production code, right? And then we can do this sort of in an iterative kind of manner as well. So let's talk about some specific example of smart applications. So safety is the number one top concern for us. And so what we do with the safety team is actually building the signal processing for everything that happened during a trip itself, so that we can know and determine what might have happened in a trip. Let's talk about that in a bit. But the other thing we talked about at the very beginning, right, Uber Eats recommendation is also doing that. And you know, this kind of dedicated pipeline is not uncommon for things like Uber Eats could build, basically their own distributed recommendation engine. The other thing we do is we also do this NLP model for looking at support tickets so that it can be more effectively allocated and assigned to the right party for support. We're also looking at different accounts and look at risk scoring for driver accounts. But overall, things like computing a lifetime value model for operation is also a big part of things that can be done, you know, that is currently done in Data Science Workbench along with Spark itself. The other type of things, there's other set of things that are kind of similar, but it might be kind of more a operational pipeline type of thing. Things like offer matching auditing, synthetic control for generating a significant amount of data as a control set for experimentation. The other thing that we talk about, all the sensor data that happened during the trip itself. So in essence, we're looking at all the lots of trip that we have at the same time are getting ingested and propagated through, and then getting processed. All the sensors that are during each of these trips are getting processed this way using Spark. And what's kind of really interesting is this kind of scenario, you have different trips of different lengths, right? So sometimes your trip is really long. Most of the trips are much shorter. So you get really heavy data skew and scale problem with these kind of data sets. And then for things like pricing optimization, forecasting, demand modeling, these are more operational type that we have actually plugged in production that is leveraging Spark for that kind of processing. Other things that are worthwhile to mention is also like looking at maps, and then you know BI type of data modeling and aggregation and things like that is also leveraging Spark as well. So we talk about all these use cases of Spark. Well, there's actually some challenges with Spark here, and we will talk about a little bit of that. So with Uber, with Spark, both of them are actually moving really quickly. So it becomes sometimes a problem when we have to go both of them fast at the same time. So in the data platform team, our goal here is to make Apache Spark, we make investment in the platform itself to better serve the Uber's internal need. So we start with open source Apache Spark as a project. And then there are some changes we have to look at in terms of how do we make it more scalable, or looking at the unique data set and the data schema and the structure we have, and also the environment we have, and make sure that it actually works well. So we're going to talk about a little bit about some of the lessons learned at a high level. For example, one of the first problem we, well, not the first problem, but one of the problems I want to first talk about is there are many, many 2 gigabyte kind of limit. If you think about that, that kind of makes sense. You know, 32 bit, you know, that's kind of the limit. Specifically, if you have to fetch remote partition, that is cache, greater than 2 gigabyte, it actually doesn't work today. So we have this really old ticket in the Spark project, 1391. That was open 4 years ago, and we still have a number of fixes going in as of basically a few months ago. So this presents a problem if you have a huge amount of data that you want to cache because, you know, there's multiple heavy processing iteration and so on, it makes sense to cache it, but it exceeds a particular size, right? So if you have 4 terabyte data, you want to cache it. It may seem like a lot, it's actually not that much in grand scheme of things. Well, if you have a 2 gigabyte limit per executor, essentially what that means is you need to have thousands of workers in order to cache these, right? So that means even if you have really beefy machine running the executor, it's not really that leveraging the full power of it, because you only basically can keep about 2 gigabyte of cache data, you know, for each data set with an executor, which is not a lot. 2 gigabyte per JVM is really, really nothing. So this presents sort of a problem here. A second kind of problem is similar to the large amount of data. If you need to do a join or you need to do some sort of sorting, this happens every day, thousands of times with the ingestion platform we have. Then we have many jobs that could be easily moving 20 terabyte or more, and sometimes 100 terabyte. So if you look at maybe 2,000 node and then 2,000 Spark external shuffle servers, so these are sort of a Cartesian join of all these communication and connection that needs to be made essentially all the time. So external shuffle service reliability becomes one of the big problems. This has been an effort that we're driving along with the community ever since, I think, around June timeframe, looking at specifically, we're hitting this utilization problem, this IO utilization problem, and hitting some of the throughput limit in that scale. So we have a few Jira and design proposal that was sent to the community for review, and also collaborating with a few different companies in this space. So when we have issue with shuffle service, one thing I do want to highlight also is that that makes reprocessing also very expensive. When you have long executing tasks, each of these failure you see when you're unable to reach a particular data set in an external shuffle service means that potentially the entire stage would need to get reprocessed. If you multiply that by 1,000-fold, this is a huge amount of resource you're spending in terms of reliability. So to give you a perspective of why this is such an important thing for us. So another challenge, we talk about a sensor processing that goes in for safety, looking at trip classification. These are all connected together to this, essentially. When you have some particular trips that has huge amount of data, in some cases we have 30,000 value in one particular record, that becomes a huge data skew problem, right? And you can't just drop the session, obviously. So this becomes a very complicated thing when we have essentially Spark job that has custom transformation, UDF running in Scala, processing these things, essentially consuming more than 3,000 core and also 12 terabyte of memory on an ongoing basis that's process these kind of thing. But data skew is, in some cases, unavoidable, right? In this case, it's kind of challenging because you can't just rebalance it because it's one record that has huge amount of data. And you can't break it up, right? I mean, there's a need of like understanding what happened in a session itself, so you can do your normal data parallelization technique with this. So there's a lot more we're looking into. How do we handle these kind of really long nested kind of data set? One last thing I want to talk about is also distributed machine learning on a very large data set. So one thing that we're doing a lot is running booster tree distributed model training. We're using XGBoost. What we want to get to is passing more than 500 million plus record into XGBoost for training that tree. Well, I think we're pretty far off on that. We're looking at a few millions, I think, right now, and we were able to train about, I think, 20 million as of last week. But when you think about machine learning and machine learning model training in general, the more stability and reliability becomes sort of a more prominent problem because the nature of the iterative kind of type of workload. So Project Hydrogen and Apache Spark project was brought up back in June. So we are working in the community and Databricks specifically on getting that ready and also testing this out as well. Part of this is the various scheduling feature is a part of that, so that all the worker node running XGBoost could be scheduled at the same time. One problem we've seen is that say you have 10 workers running and they run XGBoost, and Spark only knows it's actually running something, right? You know, native code, Python, for example. And one of them failed for whatever reason, maybe malform data and so on. XGBoost is like, okay, it's dead, right? I'm gonna terminate these things. And then Spark is like, well, the worker failed, I'm gonna just go restart that worker. Except that this new worker come in and I can't talk to XGBoost, the other XGBoost guys. It's basically a classic problem where sort of a separation of two different systems that they don't really understand and talk to each other. So barrier scheduling is one attempt here is make sure that at least these guys are going in and out at the same time. But if you think about like some of the things I talked about a couple minutes ago, well, if you have heavy job that's run hours and hours of time or maybe tens of hours of time and one particular thing fail, you probably don't want to restart the whole thing, right? Even if Spark now understand has to restart the whole process, or reset the whole stage anyway, that could be very expensive. So there's still a number of things we're adding on top of that in terms of looking at leveraging checkpointing, native checkpointing within the machine learning packages, for example. So these are the things we're looking into that really effectively want to push much higher number of record to pipe through this kind of system at a very high scale. Other things we're doing is geospatial type of analysis that we're doing that leveraging Python itself. We're running thousands of nodes on these, and these are all happening every day. So we talked about some of the challenges, and let's talk about some of the things we're doing, actually, to address some of these. So we have this open source project, and this is why I'm wearing this, and we have this effort here within Uber called Uber Open Source. This is one of the projects that's listed today. We actually have a few dozens already in there. So what we built is actually an in-process component that runs inside of JVM itself, collecting metrics from JMX, process, and all these other information, and then have it sent to Kafka for processing. So within Kafka, we can ingest that data and have it basically show up as a table for analysis, echo analysis. Or we can do some real-time analysis bits, right? And then all of that could fit into an observability portal that we built. So there are some links here, hopefully you can see. But Outside of Zeus, really nothing specific to Spark to this. We actually have a few people who are pick up the interest in this project and contribute a few improvements in this space. So any JVM process could leverage something like this, basically. Add that into the class path, and get loaded, and then point it to whatever messaging data source you can plug into. And one other thing it does is it actually supports something like co-injection, so which means you can arbitrarily instrument a particular method to keep track of how it's being called or when it's being called. So it's really good, handy development tool and debugging tool. Like I said, it's open source. There's a blog post to talk about this. But essentially, go to eng.uber.com. You can find it. So the profiler, like I said, is a jar. It also has a pipeline. So this is kind of some of the theme here that we have. But before we get to other pieces we have, one example of kind of what we discover from this is we were looking at all the Hive on Spark ETL queries. What we discover, essentially, to summarize, is 70% of all the different jobs that we have use less than 80% of the memory allocated. So this is a huge saving because of this discovery in terms of what kind of resource allocation tuning that we can do. So this kind of tooling is critical in terms of addressing sort of the over-provisioning trend that we have running all sort of jobs. So if you look at observability in general, this is a chat that we have here in the team. We also have other types of pipeline. One other pipeline we have is for log processing. We look at log4j log, all the text and the logging text that gets spewed in there. Any given day, we have tens of terabytes of log data getting generated. So what we did is we built a log processing project pipeline that actually not only processes these log files in a timely manner within minutes, also does these three things. Extract out the metrics in terms of things like that. And also classifying the individual job itself. One prime example is, hey, we want to know how many of Spark jobs are PySpark job. How many of these are calling to Python? How many of these are using Spark SQL? How many of these are, you know, other things that is going on in this space? And the last thing, what the log processing pipeline does is also the root cause analysis. So when you have exception, if you have thousands of nodes running these and you have exception, some of them fail, have some cascading effect on each other, it's kind of hard to know what is the problem here. And you know, a Spark UI is very nice, but imagine trying to find which ones was the first executor that failed among thousands of these, and then click through and find a log. It probably takes you a good number of minutes to get to it. So this is kind of something we do, is an automatic root cause analysis that we also process from the log file. This plugs right into log4j. The other thing we do is Spark has a system called called event log or Spark metrics. That's different from the JVM metric stuff, but essentially these are information about stages and tasks, processing, scheduling, delay, things like that. So we also built a listener pipeline for collecting these things in a very similar kind of mechanism. And that get leverage for things like what we just recently added is SQL execution plan. So we know when we're running Spark SQL job, what is happening, what table is being accessed, which column is being accessed after the physical plan is constructed. So that's very useful for looking at data readiness, lineage, and things like that. And also dependency. So then you look at very last piece of the puzzle. We also have a portal where everybody can go and find out what happened to the job, do debugging, look at chargeback, look at resource use, all these other things. That's part of the, it's kind of round out the whole observability space. So one last thing I want to talk about as a topic is how do we keep up with the pace and in kind of the culture, both internal and external. So if you remember, we built this as a service. Essentially, really just there's really two different services like pieces. The external shuffle service and the history server, highlighted in yellow here. Spark itself is kind of essentially a jar that could either provide it by the resource manager itself, or it could be a jar that package up into the application itself. So that's really convenient. The problem here is that means everybody's running their own version of things, essentially. It's out of the control. So in any given time, we could be running like no less than 12 different releases of Spark inside Uber. Obviously, a lot of it is 2.1 and 2.2 or 2.0 of Spark, but it's a long tail. So when we look at supporting these, it becomes a huge problem for us, right? We have dozens of teams doing their own thing sometimes. They have their own process and tooling and framework. Oftentimes, they have a fork of the open source project. Different up-to-date freshness and patches and release, for these all these repository. It's great that we can move fast, but it becomes more of a hurdle for us when we have to juggle this. Like when the source space is stale, or when somebody asks us to say, hey, there's this problem here. Oh, it's actually fixing this release, but you are not running that release. Or now that you have why don't we cherry pick these fixes then? Well, sometimes it's very hard to cherry pick fixes from 2.3 of Spark to 1.6 of Spark, or even impossible. So that becomes a problem with keeping up. And as things evolve, it becomes very expensive and challenging. So part of the things we want to do as a part of this is to build up the entire development process around Spark releases itself. So we build containerized build on Jenkins. We run unit tests on it. We have functional tests and benchmarking tests on new releases. So in case like Spark 2.4 releases within the next few weeks, for example, then we're ready to actually test that. Then we do a small deployment validation, and then we do integration testing, and then start to roll it out. And we also have canary tests after that to make sure things are still working properly. And then we have other source fork for different types of environments, specifically the one around Peloton. It's a different type of way of integrating. But hopefully we'll get to a point where we can have sort of a consolidate part. So some example here, when we talk about the unique environment and the unique scale and some of these challenges, we have some specific fixes that we do internally as well. But we're looking at also upstreaming these things. So the way we're thinking about this is we have the Spark as a service. This is where we kind of control having one service, different environment under the one umbrella that we control what's going in. And then we're going to have supported and tested releases. For example, we're running 2.31 as of last week. And it's all completely based on open source releases. What we want to do also is to migrate existing source repository with some of these major team. We've done that for two. We've done it for one, and we're looking at two more, for example, to move it to the release that we have. And then, like I said, we're also looking at whatever specific internal fixes we have, also try to upstream it as much as possible. But our effort in this space is more around reliability, efficiency, and ML, right? Like some of the scenario I talk about. So to wrap up, a couple of things we're thinking about. We want to make sure whatever work we're doing, we design the community, looking at public extension, API extension point. We're also looking at moving to internal fork for proving its scale, but bringing it upstream to review with the community. Some of the bigger changes we're doing already around Spark scalability and reliability for shuffle service, for example, it's following this model in the last few months. When we have other bigger change, we're going to be looking at collaborating with a few other folks in the community with a public fork as well. So I think this is kind of the last slide we have. In terms of engaging community, a few things we're doing. We have done data platform meetup at multiple cities around the world, actually. We're having an open source summit to bring in folks in the Bay Area also to talk. We also have folks like me going in conferences talking about things. We also engage with the community in DevEd type of communication. So essentially, to wrap up, we're getting there. There's a little path going in, a little shady, but we're getting there. So I think that's it. Any question? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah, so that's a great question. So by the way, I have some sticker for Uber Open Source if people would like to get some over here. So Michelangelo is the whole overall platform about versioning a model, performance monitoring, that sort of thing. We in Data Science Workbench, we don't have source control integration yet today. I think that has been basically fairly high on the radar in terms of this is an area where once you get especially a collaboration happening, multiple people working on the space. So right now, we don't. I think we're more focused on the outcome for now in terms of the model that gets created, that get uploaded into a model repository, essentially, and have sort of these monitor tool that we talked about back here that does the monitoring of performance, model performance here. That's kind of what we're doing at the moment. In terms of the actual logic and how it changes, there are some versioning as part of Michelangelo. In Data Science Workbench, we don't. I think part of it is integrating a version control in Jupyter is non-trivial amount of work, as far as I know. I actually work in that space. So it's a little tricky. But yeah, I think that's one thing we're looking at. The other thing is, because we have a storage system with DSW, so we also manage like versioning, and you can store multiple copies manually that way. And it's a distributed storage, right? If you plug into this part here, that is storing also your data set and also the notebook itself. So this is basically a shared data data storage. So you can keep multiple versions of a notebook that way. I think that's kind of what we have in place. Yes?
So what is your JVM profiler profiling, and then when you're using it in a Spark application, and, like each executor or each NVM can run different codes from different job stages and tasks?
Yes.
So is there a good thing for the general JVM profiler to split them out into like different stages or jobs?
So the focus, I think that's an interesting, that's a good point. The focus of the profiler is more around how is the process doing, right? Around the JVM side of things. But like I said, we do have the listener that's more focused on the Spark specific things, right? The staging and tasks. So if we join these two set of data together, then you can say in this given point in time, this machine is allocating that much heat memory, for example, and that's running this task, for example. Then that's the way you can correlate these two together. It just kind of makes sense to separate into, I mean, there's no really reason why it can't be the same thing. It's just that this has much tighter integration, especially the problem I talk about with like so many releases, and in fact, the listener interface changes multiple times in these releases. It becomes more a problem to be tied into the other project, so we have a separate project that sort of adopted a different version of Spark and interface that way. So this, because right now it's separated, but these are all going piped through internally to different Kafka topic, right? And then when the table are landed in here, then we can join them together that way. Yeah. Is there a specific reason you think that would be useful? I'm kind of curious. Yeah. I see. Okay. Yes, so the profiler can do the injection where basically collect the stack, what happened when calls are made and so on. That's one way. Spark itself also have a dump thread action that you can get from the Spark UI. So these are two different ways, but they basically serve the same purpose. So you can kind of see, so one thing you can do is think of this as a little bit of an iterative process, right? You run these things, you see a particular stage, it's expensive, then you try to see what are the threads running at the time, right? You can do some specific injection point in production while the jobs are running as well to turn it on, and then you can then collect more information about that. So that's kind of what this project can do. So take a look at it, actually. You know, welcome your input on that. So anything else? Okay, thanks.